Before I introduce George Stanley, there are a couple of announcements that I'd like to make. First, we were originally, Diane DePrima was scheduled to read this afternoon with George Stanley. And I spoke with her in New York, and she's sick. She has hepatitis. And her doctor forbade her taking the trip. And I assured her that she could have a rain check. So we'll have her eventually. I would like to call to the attention of student writers, an announcement that the Poetry Center is making. This is a statement that Stan Rice and I sent around to all the teachers in creative writing. It says, please tell poets interested, this is student poets, to come to the Poetry Center in the Humanities Building, room 340, before October 31st, that's next Tuesday, to sign a reading list. This is going to be an open student reading on November 1st, next Wednesday, November 1st, next Wednesday, beginning at 12:30 and running, hopefully, for 3 hours, wide open. Any student poets who want to read, all they have to do, come to the Poetry Center, put their name on a list. There'll be minimum control. We're asking you to put your name on the list simply so that we'll have some idea of how many people there are, so we can set some kind of time limit so everybody gets heard. So if you are interested in reading your work, come to the Poetry Center, sign the list, and come here next Wednesday at 12:30. We're hoping, eventually, to get a room in which poets can read their work every week at an established hour late in the afternoon, this for the benefit of themselves and other student poets and creative writing faculty and anyone else who's interested. As soon as we've set up such a room and such a time, we'll make that news available to you. It's a pleasure indeed to give you George Stanley today. I thought it might be, this is not his first reading for the Poetry Center. He read for the Poetry Center at the, years ago, at the Neighborhood Association building on Telegraph Hill on Sunday, March 16th, 1958. And for that, he read with Ebba Beauregard. And for that reading, Jack Spicer wrote a note, which I'd like to read you. This was 1958. George had been writing for, a year or so, at least according to, and had published a single book called The Love Route, published by White Rabbit. Dear George, here's a note called George Stanley by Jack Spicer. Dear George, I'm afraid I won't be able to write your program notes for you. In the process of trying to write them, I have discovered how much I dislike program notes. You may, however, publish this letter of apology. I can think of nothing to say about your poetry that would be of interest to you or your audience. What you will be reading to them is the result of only a year of effort, a year in which you discovered that wit could be combined with pathos, that a short poem can suggest the event it celebrates, and that you have a fine voice. This is, although I don't expect you to believe me, a great deal to discover in 1 year. It would perhaps be unfair of me to suggest to you, who have beaten me so often at Scrabble, that you have too many words, or as one who has listened with delight to you subvert a conversation, that you are too quick to hit the nail on the head. These are, for the moment, amiable vices, and ones which, if they are pushed far enough, can themselves become style. Nor can I, with any degree of honesty, object to the fact that the subject matter of all your poems is erotic. You are interested in the erotic this year. As for hinting that there are other, excuse me, As for hinting that there are other houses of poetry that you might enter, you know about them as well as I do. You will enter some of them and burn down others. There will be, I leave this to you as both a threat and a promise, other years. Love, Jack. Since that time, since 1958, George Stanley has published Tête Rouge, Pony Express Riders, Flowers, and a forthcoming book will be called Beyond Love. I think George needs very little introduction to you. I think he is one among younger writers in this area. I think he is perhaps the most nearly universally admired for a dedication and a courage and a candor and a determination to be genuine. It's a great pleasure to give you George Stanley.
Thank you, Mark. I hope that as many of you have as possible get a chance to look at this sheet of paper, self-description, that I wrote at Mark Lindenthal's request a couple of months ago. I didn't think I could write any such thing. Previously, when somebody asked me to write a description of myself, I just wrote down what school I went to and that I'd been in the Army for 3 years. And I didn't allude to anything personal or anything I felt about poetry. And this time I didn't have too much trouble. I wrote this in about 10 or 20 minutes. I heard Dr. Frederick Perls speak last week at Lowell High School, and he used the word actualization. And I think I would like to, in the last sentence of this paper where I say, I think of poetry as the realization of imagery, I would like to correct that to actualization. I'm going to read a few short poems. I had planned, of course, to read with Diane de Prima, so up until yesterday, I really hadn't expected to be, so to speak, taking up a whole hour. But I haven't added too much to what I originally intended to read, both because there's a certain limit to the amount of poetry from one poet that people can listen to or want to listen to, and because I didn't really want to change I've wondered when I've gone to poetry readings how it was that poets decided what poems they were going to read, and I think what I've found in giving a few readings now is that I read the poems that I like the best right now. Usually those are the most recent poems, and then those of older poems that I like, and also this selection of poems in a way kind of expresses how I write now, 1967, October, feel. I added a few poems, which I'll start with. I hope that I can read a few poems and maybe say a word or two, you know, before each one of these first few, but then I hope as I go on that I will stop talking and just be reading poetry, and then after that we can talk. I'm going to read about four or five poems from Pony Express Riders. Intermezzo. Riding at dawn on the prairie, in the morning he came to a few trees, the watering place, dismounted and led his horse down the mud slick to the stream. Drinking from the stream, he saw his face reflected in it, the trunks of the trees, the sky, and the sun in broken patterns, fallen leaves on the water. He led his horse up from the stream, mounted, and rode away. He rode faster now on the prairie, in the morning sun, white streaks on the Rockies gleamed. Approach of the storm. Leaves torn from dry branches rise in the wind. Birds wheel in a bleak sky. A pale flash lights the east. The brown and white cattle lift their heads. The rider reins up, waits. The storm advances, black clouds torn by stabs of lightning. The sky at the horizon darkens. The rain begins. A torrent in the dark. The cattle run for shelter, barns, fences. The rider rides in the storm. Immortality. The sky goes round the earth. The flat white sun comes up. The Pony Express riders ride on the plains. Indians on horseback fit arrows to their bows. Arms draw the bowstrings taut, and the arrows fly. The Pony Express riders, struck by the arrows, fall from their horses to the plains. Have I? What's happening now? Can you move the mic closer to me? Can that be done? People always tap on the mic to see if it's working. Is it working now?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to read one more of these. Largo. In the shadow of a hill he rides, his shadow rides the hill. Rider on a white horse, in sunlight to the line of blue, on a dark horse in a valley of wild fruit trees, the gnarled branches bare and flowering. In the shadow of a hill he rides, his shadow rides the hill. This poem, written just after Pony Express Riders, I still don't quite understand. But what happened was I changed the pronoun to from he to I. One summer evening I rode out, and the flowers closed their petals. All ahead was dark, no path in the trees, but as I rode, the trees led me. So to my own heart it seemed, necessity led me on through the forest, though it darkened, though the plants that bore the white and closing flowers gave way to plants that did not. It was not my own heart I was listening to. There was no sound. Rabbits and antelope. Rabbits ran through a forest, escaping a forest fire, squeaking like pigs. Lightning had fired the tree tips. The flames were old and cold, but crackled. The dry branches exploded at the joints, and at the edge of the forest, the pine cones, burned at the stems, fell smoking into the field. And at the edge of the forest, the rabbits milled around behind some dead logs, sniffing at mold and mushrooms. As the burning branches fell, the rabbits' necks were broken and backs were broken, mind and fur. That fire was cold, out of which the antelope leaped and, making a right angle in the air, sped south. I'm going to read the last three poems of the new book, Beyond Love. The title, Beyond Love, is obvious translation, but actually it's Muriel Rukeyser's translation of a poem by Octavio Paz, Masaya del Amor, or De Amor. De, I think. For Armando. I thought of Achilles trying to get at the blood where it is all shadow, the life. Odysseus, to whom death is another place, like Phaeacia, not letting too many of them come close at once, trying to get at the blood, the arteries and veins, the jut of the chin and the fire of eyes, beyond the trench, wanting. On the hill at 11 o'clock, the searchlight market closed. No more ice cream from Swenson's, no more chilled wine. Where the E-car ran, oh, 15 years ago when I was a kid, turned left at Larkin and right again at Vallejo to miss the hill where Fran lives now. It seems strange a streetcar ever ran there. Iron gray, maroon trim, one door in the middle. I told you all this when I said it was something else that made me freeze with terror of the dark, not the loss you knew. You said, of course, the hill tilts me nightly. Stars I can see from Union and Leavenworth high in the sky. They make me think it's later than I think, but when I get to Columbus, they aren't risen yet. They're sunk behind Telegraph Hill. It's only 12:30. Cut the throat of the lamb. It flows in the trench. Bah, lammy pie. The streetcar, in an early dream, a K or L in the tunnel, turned off suddenly to the left or right on a new route, emerged into an underground cavern, a new world, where it streaked past lights and trees like a model train layout. This place of dim expectancy brightened gradually. It wasn't the sun. It was dawn in the world where I sleep. But I woke as a child and I wake as a man to a familiarness, a room. October 18th. I want all my love healed. I want this in, the heartache stilled. Later, the day, when it seems all these sorts aren't being played out, sliding downhill. October 20th. I brood over giving, receiving, imagined slights. I wonder how these lines will be read. A moth flying around the lamp that shines through its gray wings. October 21st, the full moon rose with the clearest face I've ever seen. I had had all those thoughts about death, suffered from them, told them to you in the bar that night. Love and my sense of humor, you said, were evolutionary. Then grew proud of them on the hill in the other direction, no longer needing to act out of reasons of power or fame. Love, be my master, Richard Burton as Antony. Incident, and woke up again. And the bowerbird builds in Australia, plants stems in the ground around a tree that keep on growing, an arch to form his roof, and a lawn, tuft by tuft, where we look to find something when it is no longer lost. As I said, I saw the moon. Later, the days are still, autumn gray, with heat of breath, a sighing in and out. October 28th. Waking up this morning, I thought it wouldn't be so bad to die drowsily at the end of life. Last night I saw ivy rain-spattered in the alley outside the spaghetti factory, the big white veins standing out.
Manger says you can tell a man's age, even if his face is as smooth as a boy's, by his veins on the backs of his hands and wrists. November 6th. We know the body is immortal, but the spirit dies. November 8th. Withdrawing from the feast, Achilles doesn't see Patroclus crawling out of his little hole. Robin wrote, "It won't be complete darkness because there isn't any. One thing will stop, and that's this overweening pride in the peacock flesh." Ajax stands stock still, won't answer Odysseus' relentless questioning. Rain on Filbert Street, on the steps leading down into the stars. The joy of each thing to be utter, not frittered away in its connection to other parts. Monday no more than Tuesday. Dying day, lying day, this day in the rain. A poem like a hunk of conglomerate. Can we and it live in this year? But in the stream bed, ultimately dislodgeable. The stream of time, like one of the freshets on the Sierra. A trickle in summer, but now, November, with the rain starting, swelling, foaming over the little dams. Patroclus in Paul's painting lunges forward like he does in the 16th book of the Iliad. It is existence in reverse, beauty and youth returning, refreshing the source. It takes place in absolute quiet, and Hector and even Apollo seem like cops next to him here in the stream bed. I'm really surprised at your applause. I read that poem very badly. Thank you, anyway. For Harold, this is dying, to cut off a part of yourself and let it grow. The whole self crawls at the thought of being mutilated, even self-mutilated, as occurred to me when you mentioned you had never looked at the poem about Attis, and neither had I, nor at where in a poem feeling dries up. Oh, excuse me. This is dying, to cut off a part of yourself and let it grow. The whole self crawls at the thought of being mutilated, even self-mutilated, as occurred to me when you mentioned you had never looked at the poem about Attis, and neither had I, nor at where in a poem feeling dries up, a waterfall-filled Sierra Canyon, damned Hetch Hetchy of our spirit, Attis's cock in some tree, in some jug of wine, or beautiful lips mouthing who we love growing. So the fireflies go with small lunchboxes mooning around trees. We cut our conversation off, too, in sacrifice. Birds, brinks, even our whole environment, out to the farthest star you can never reach because of light's unchanging speed, and so your dying can never reach either. Blood, not sinking into the ground mysteriously, but in the Roman sewers forever, our hometown. The moon is blank when new, a blank board of possibility. I look to the west, or in me, there is no, not like a sharp note and a false note, signal. It is characterless and undiscernible if. What is that to the need for an undenied change being exerted? With a sudden sword to cut notes between us and the stars, freeing them, or us, or make a duck walk, or a watch tick, cuneiform, or a gravity concealed by our hands in their usual ways of beckoning. Now I'm going to read what I think right now is another book, not completed, but so far. The tentative title I give to this book is You. The tentative, this is a quotation which I probably will use, that is, if I don't get tired of it by reading it, readings in the book right at the beginning. The lover in the Vita Nuova rightly and properly says, for the most part, Ella, and only at times, Voi. The spectator of the Paradiso, when he says Colui, speaks from poetic necessity and knows it. If God is addressed as he or it, it is always allegorically. But if we say thou to him, then mortal sense has set the unbroken truth of the world into a word. Martin Buber, I and Thou. Tree talk. Not speaking in human speech. Barrens. Past forked tongue. The clouds do move. I saw the veins of the face, they branched. The ape is combing his hair back. The waterfalls are falling waters. Burns shorter. Flowers nearer, neighbors make newer. Blank. Is regret or egret. Blank. Falcon. Blank. But let these different times be the result of phrasing and see how well it is, like limes squeezed where lambs are grazing, our pharmacies. Blank. Brooked back the bucket door, the thetis and thesis combine brought up pearls which did shine, ropes, blank. Blank. There was the moon. Tickling. Trickling down the rear of the eye did the trick, but with a hook, comfort caused. Change voices. Blank. Change voices. Returning you. Ferret. Turnips. Which is a matter of reading. They persuade rings, turkeys, which dispersing corn, flagrancies of a division, came with feet, crossed a lintel, diamonds, rain, college of scents and incense, diurnal to the toes, bandy-legged merchants of descending rings, closets, rendering blood, books, forest, blank, often, off in, headsets, the criminal of Durance with his mammal sword, accord, view, with you, past, reoccur, endue. Imprison, the feet, the tassel dancer, blank, the beaver, blank, Lake Winnebago, built out of a hat and some corn, blank, lightning shorn cattle, impost. They are telling all kinds of stories to each other in the dark, the pitcher spilt. Blank, from the divorce of a word, from reason. Good sense would tell it, be quiet, and the coffin comes out of a hat and nine. Blank. Arithmetic done by elves and star men. Look you, you said it right. The Wright brothers who flew over North Carolina and Ohio. Chance song, dipper, real line homeward, the storks. Blank, tree talk. Choir. A poem in simple words. In the water, the hungry mind. Lines are let down baited. The turbulence in the air is far greater than that in the water, the friction in the water greater. Daylight and devilfish interfere with the currents, the traffic. The mind might follow the brighter, warmer, faster moving water to its glassy diminuendo. The The cigarettes are lit and the sunset is dead as night and bright as day. The ultra-green leaves of our trees in summer twist from their stems and fall to the heavy magnetic river. Pagan Joke sits on a rock, trembling in his silver hair and the mist. Honesty is an arrow pointing at the indivisibly divided, the canisters, the stony circles on the sunny slope. The teeth draw blood from the forehead. Just inside the window is a trail of cobweb. It looks like gold hair on the dirty glass. The limestone has withdrawn from the granite. In 10 years, an inch. Bats cling to the ledge. I hear the murmur of the water falling into silence and into a longer leap than I can see or hear, current. Visible in the flicker of fire, like thorns, the curiosity of fire scratched on the blackness of sight a million times. Blindness streaked the mind's eye like a fire opal. Violets in the flicker of water, in the fingers of rock. Let the anchor down into the mud. Look up at the stars, below the fog bank where the prow of thought's galleys, motionless features, dumb as a chess piece, juts dim. Insane waves, sea waves and brain waves, brains in skulls, hands on wires, the corpse of breath glued to the bark. Look then down into the secret place where the silkworm is wedged. Wedged, can't move, not asleep, not really alive though, Ophelia of the rocks. Her smile is dead, but hints fleetingly at a crystalline animation, sulky, limitless universe of which the parts of our bodies are clouds. Argus. People throng the streets, ride chilly buses, stumble the unwarmable park paths, doze on sunny grass, at dusk drink from a glass, maroon cheeks, yellow liver, gilt balsa frame of the mirror, whale shape, dolphin shape, define your shape. A swollen wind that knows no walls I am. I am Argus, the peacock tail, flashing through your detail, entering the places left behind. Towns for Steve Diamant. Chimes of glass in us that answer as we are going. Maybe the meeting not to be of us. If I take the darkest way, the ticket to ride, where no soft hands come to order the things, what did I mean then when your visible love made me think of towns in us? Facet, suggested by a painting by Bruce Erbacher. Bitter moonlight, the collapse in walls. The radiant thing, revealed in the transparencies of understanding, is on the table there, chilling. Quick as a clot, you tear your care away, swirl upward, like negative drapery to which the careless leaves attach. This is the longest poem in the book so far, in 7 parts, called You. The enemy in the Vietnam War is you. You as I see you. You defined by my seeing you. You out in the country, for example. And for example, necessarily. No one picture, no one event of you relative to other people, waves, stars, no experience of yours or of you in, by, or within life is you, nor without my seeing are you in your sense of yourself the enemy. O soft body, your face, wreathed in flowers, light and shadow, so, falling. In the village or between the villages, not man, not humanity, you. Is this over subtle? Is it splitting hairs to say my country's enemy in Vietnam is not humanity, not the human spirit, but, to put it as clearly as I can, one man as he is seen by another, in the village or between the villages? Where are you? I've been looking for you all day. Ever since eyes have been seeing and ears have been hearing, listening for news of you, wanting to see you, lips moving, words, many quick words, you draw a picture in the air to make more clear to me what you meant. See? This is the part that gets in the way of the use that can be made of the Vietnamese. My government does not want to kill people like the Nazis. My government does not wish to deny political liberty to the Vietnamese people. Differences of opinion have their place in a free enterprise system. Debates, panel shows. But we must turn them away from each other and bring them out of the villages and countryside willingly to where the loudspeakers blare and the flags wave, so that having lost sight of you, they will find beauty in the things that pour from the horn of plenty. 2. The emperor sits across from me. By his black boots I knew him. Not right across from me. Look at the picture. He is to my left, your right. He faces the west. I crouch somewhere in the hills, with a polychrome face, diseased. I am a poet. I can't sit like the Greeks do, with their heels drawn up against their ass, their elbows resting on their knees, rocking on the floor. They counsel moderation in all things. How little they know of the emperor. He is incapable of excess. He fingers his dark jaw thoughtfully. His throne goes down into the volcano, beyond Sicily, into the sea. One of its legs is of coral. 3. I have another story, our winking series of glow men. Your lover died in France. Red lips are not so red as the stained stones kissed by the English dead. Now you're a homeowner. You throw a brick at Martin Luther King. And we've survived the Beatles. They live in a yellow submarine. Mad Magazine has survived all that op art and pop art. Napalm makes a blister, a keloid. Your whole soft body from the shoulders to the waist like a pork skin, the kind you eat with beer. I have another story, our series of winking glow men. 4. Out of all this rubbish, images of sheep, some of them lacking clothing, and the need for sex with my lover, who is so far away, I can't imagine. The broken handwriting aches itself into scripture. I try to see again what I have seen. Why in this broken empire it is even important that I write a poem. The railroads all broken up, the spread of cars, the ears that can only hear one word, the breath caught in the windpipe, images of sheep winding down passionate declivities, trees lifting themselves by the roots out of the land, walking so that the whole mass of it shifts, an Arab cloud, smoke into heaven, gasping for breath. God give me a pen. Make me into a pencil. Put in me what I need and take away what you want of me to tell men about the United States. I am a man. Maybe no poet. I guess I've given up rhyme. I love men. I can't get a single word out, but I'm rich in metaphors, but nothing occurs to me nowadays but blood filling blisters on the stomach or legs of someone that is a friend or lover to someone. That dinner I ate at the gay restaurant tonight is thick with blood, Christ's blood. Where are you, darling? You are God. I must not degrade you by calling you God. Go on away from me. Be yourself. 5. Sheep come at the end. The world, suddenly, strangely, is corpse still. But this is what might have been expected. Out of the alleys and all structures, whether tenanted or disused, the practical applications following, on the hooves of, they move faster than we do. They don't look up or down. You will see the red stone afloat in their eyes. They don't sniff around your garbage cans like raccoons. They are creatures of your own will, you who have learned to dream so well. The moon hardly moves either where you sail now and what was real. 6. The door of gold has shut, the door of brass has shut. You sit across from me, Emperor, between us a prism. It is supposed to tell what God will do with us. It is supposed to appeal. There's that special telegraph system that goes on between you and him. My miscellaneousness must be petty to you, stupor mundi. I see a lot of sparks. Me a spark, he a spark, everywhere a spark, spark. Tired of squatting, making up to you. The door of gold has shut. The door of brass has shut. The door of grass, even. 7. No longer do we leave any tracks where we walk, either in the sand or in the sky above our heads. Count on turned down cards, lucky numbers, days. The wind starts again and the dunes shift. A weed with flat green leaves and roots like hair, you either step on or do not, wherever it is. The meaning of all story in every step, therefore no story, no rise and fall, except that of the dunes. Nothing will be hidden. Everything will be announced. Take care that you stumble, that your stumbling does not resemble the stumbling of a man playing at stumbling, eyes on the image, some war hero. Wind and faces. Old faces carried down from the highest hills, flushed. These are the old sunset sand dunes where I used to walk, prowl, where all my cruelty has been hidden away. Man has conquered the face of the earth, drained her eyes. Now all men want peace and quiet, but memory wants the confluence undone, the rivers torn away from each other, one to flow with fire and one with clear water in which the face can be seen and the pebbles, the flakes of gold. 'The poem begins with a quotation from Sonny and Cher.
What?
A quotation from Sonny and Cher. Sonny Buono and his wife Cher. Teeny Bopper is our newborn king. The baby Zeus, the baby Jesus. The look on his face is beatnik apathy. Heaven and earth have stolen him away from his father Herod, from his father Kronos, in Bethlehem, in the Haight-Ashbury, hidden in Egypt, hidden in Crete, in a cave on Mount Ida, living on nectar, apples, Cheez-Its, goat's milk, broth. where the animals and the old kings go. No easy trip, though every bus line goes there too. The same way as despair, we must fall into the star. Teeny Bopper is our newborn king. Let him take you in his hands and put you where you are. Touching. If I eat dust and am proud of it, nostrils to the wind, if a flame to no god at all burns at the center of me, more is kept shrined there, if there is no shade in me, shadow, nook, arbor, where to escape a hobbyist's justice, I will leave what I am, find a place in the packedness, jostle him I know not on the bus, lie naked on the beach, touching on all sides flesh I know not, trembling, touching. Force me not up against the body of my beloved, blind, babbling against his heart, racked by dry sobs to hide from a casual meeting with him. Hell. Homage to Brother Antoninus after reading At the Edge. You know how hell feels, and that there is no continuum of feeling uniting heaven with hell, but that hell, as you go deeper, is a continuum of a type of feeling. Hell around you, hemming you in, your sensors and self-sensors, your nerves telling of the feeling of being held, a bar to being, breathing, inspecting, selecting, picking, giving, gazing, loving, living in the free air. There are so many of us just beneath the surface of any lake, any pool where you dip your finger and come up with green scum. Like the animalcules that make up the branched sponge, hell flows through us too, its propagated wave entering with every sensation, rocking us. We call it thrill. And oh, to anticipate being jiggled by it. I sit in my wicker chair and acquiesce, daydreaming of kissing. I get up heavier, my words out of order, my hand movements jerky, feigned spontaneity. Crossing the street, I'm liable to trip, bump into somebody, trying to go too fast. Desperately, then I give up, let it take over. That rhythm, slower than my heartbeat, and slowing with my heartbeat, claiming me as its. By the light that gets through to us, and the bright colors of the fish, bright as the colors of birds' breasts, we judge we are high up in hell, yet we face downwards still, knees drawn up tight, clasped over again by our arms, wrapped on our treasures, locked deep in our bowels, candlesticks in the music box. So we are wholly drowned in it. How intent I am on what I own. Hands empty, I could almost imagine that a breeze would stir and I'd be carried off without wings. Hell feels like being kept from moving freely by an encountered opposition, something in the air around me seeping in into my innermost joints, hindering articulation like gelatin. Late in the day, I go over the terms of things. I despair of space, pressing my fingers against the bone of my brow. You implore my touch at the end of a dimension through which I forget how to reach. Last poem, the most recent. It is in five parts, which are numbered 1, 2, 3, 3A, and 3B. Thoughts and Feelings for the Art and Politics Symposium, Vancouver, October 6 to 8, 1967. 1. The U.S. can solve its internal economic problem easier than most people think it can. It is a matter of distribution of goods and depends on the poor man kowtowing, not to the affluent as serf to vassal, but to a part of his own psychic being as a victim to his torturer. The victim submits to the torture as punishment for 1. Wanting to be whole, 2. Being half, 3. Being a torturer, 4. Having given into splitting himself in the first place. Thus we become real Americans, Scots, Swiss, Japanese. 2. Maybe this can happen all over the world. Thousands will die, starting in Harlem. The black soul, the Russian soul, on their leashes. The black and Russian torturers are still babies and taking long naps, lust after their comic ideal. In working the impossible jigsaw puzzle, if anyone jogs my arm, I will scream and total night will fall. I dislike being touched. But if you wait for your breakfasts, they will be served to you, candy hearts in the oatmeal, and a little piece of night will be everyone's preserve. 3. Wherever I am, whatever I am doing, I feel somewhere else, something else. Not a passion, urgency, sense of ongoing, but a nagging, half-willed, half-resented obsession, enumeration, mumbo-jumbo counting, anxious, uncertain, to be anywhere but here and now, and under the lash of multiplied masters. Weber, in The Protestant Ethic and the Spirit of Capitalism, tells of me, I was a cloth merchant, knew the touch of rough and smooth, the reek of wet wool, berry red from blush pink. But it was through your blood I was saved. In myself I am less than nothing, less, for nothing would not have a body to stain the space-time box like a squashed fly on a window. So I asked for more production, and the woman's arm moved like a piston over the spark plug of justification. Fast as that, for one well-made thing, one gesture, one caress would damn me to everlasting luxury. And the moon was only seen at the morning window of the workhouse. 3A. Sometime late in the German and American 30s, I was joined in my exultant torment by a mouse. Mickey Mouse, the big-eared boyfriend, pulling the levers, spinning the blast controls that look like ship's wheels with me, by my side, where the buckets of molten metal sail, the dazzling ingots too hot to touch. Now all our work is done by these ducks and mice, silent splatter of computer lights, while we huddle in the cushions of our each other me. Alienation is so to be a stranger to yourself. 3B. Our politics must become more poetic, and our education must become more poetic, political, and psychoanalytic. There is simply no fucking reality in the world but you. Even the mountains are vague.
Thank George for a wonderful reading, and give everybody a chance to, who has to go to class, to go, and people who would like to take part in some kind of very informal interchange are invited to do so.